Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Reva Nelson. Your most recent book, Reva, is quite different from Risk It and Bounce Back. What inspired your memoir, Hippie Chick Abroad?
Well, since I had the trip, it always stayed with me, and I didn't have everything written down, but I had ticket stubs and pictures and a few things like that, and some poetry from the time. But it was such a pivotal year, and everything, I'd say so much of what became my later life happened because of me traveling alone with a backpack, hitchhiking through Europe, which I'd be appalled if my child ever did. He's older now, but, you know, at the time you just think you're invincible and off you go. So,
how old were you?
I was just 20. Mm-hmm. I had finished university, had some difficulties with my parents, who were good European immigrants who wanted to keep their little girl at home and a little girl, and I was more adventuresome than that. And so I finished school and just wanted to go.
Tell us a little bit more about that trip. How did it and how it changed your life?
The whole thing actually started, it's in my book, in grade 11 when I worked on the school yearbook.
Yeah.
Peter Mallett, our high school teacher, he gave us all a book, and mine was The Agony and the Ecstasy, his way of saying thanks for your work. And I read about Michelangelo, and I just, in mm-hmm. grade 11, thought, I am going to see the sculpture of the David. And that wasn't, you know, now some kids go to Europe with their parents, or they, you know, everything's online or on TV, but in those days it wasn't, and I just knew I wanted to see the sculpture. It was something about reading about the passion of Michelangelo releasing the sculpture of the David. I just had to see it.
So you went started in Italy?
I didn't start in Italy. I started in Southampton. That's where the boat landed, and we hitched up to London. Things like, for people now, post-internet and everything, you can't imagine what it's like to go to the Tate Gallery, have no idea what's there, turn the corner and see the sculpture, The Kiss by Rodin, you know, which I'd seen in a textbook. I mean, it was just so exciting, all of it. And there was a hippie culture as well, so you'd meet other people with backpacks and beards and sandals and jeans, and you'd hear about where to go next, you know. But I was very wanting to see what was inside these churches we'd heard about, and wanting to see inside the galleries, and wanting the adventure, and following the sun, you know. That was new, too. You didn't, those days, you didn't go to Florida or somewhere warm with your parents, you know. And we didn't, anyway. So the idea that you didn't have to have winter and you could just keep going south was really appealing. But things happened. We had so many adventures, for example, at a youth hostel in France. My friend saw a sign to pick grapes in Bordeaux, so we called, and this monsieur came and got us, and we stayed in this fabulous farmhouse, and his wife cooked beef bourguignon, and it was fantastic. So we just had one adventure after
grapes.
Another. Yes. Yes, and it was wonderful.
Was it a hard job?
No, because there were these young lads from, I think, Morocco, who wanted to help us carry our buckets. So we let them. But mostly, I mean, we had been, that was the time, it goes back so far, to Europe on $5 a day. That mm-hmm, book had come mm-hmm, out in around 67, 68. And we knew if we did it on $3 a day, we could stay longer. So we were eating baguettes and lavash kiwi cheese, which was new too. You can now you can get it anywhere, but then it was new cheese with French words on it. That was exciting. Also, wine was cheaper to get your wine bottle refilled than to buy water, anything like that. So we had a bottle of wine with us quite often. We stayed
and
in a convent.
Did you ever walk from place to place?
Oh, we hitchhiked. I mean, there was a time when we were stuck out between youth hostels at the very beginning in Belgium, and it poured rain, and nobody picked us up, and we were out there all day just getting soaked, and we thought maybe this was stupid and we should go home, but we didn't, and eventually a truck driver got us and delivered us to a youth hostel, and we were saved.
So, you have a section in the book called Hippie Chick Life Lessons.
Yes.
So, and you give presentations on that topic. So, tell us.
Yes,
I do. Give us some advice here.
And coaching as well. Well, the first one is keep it simple. So, I mean, it really teaches you a lot when you have all your belongings in a knapsack. And in those days, what did you need? A pair of jeans, beads, no watches, no one had a watch. You know, maybe two t-shirts, one book, Siddhartha or The Hobbit, and we traded books. You know, keep it very simple, travel lightly. I mean, this all has analogies for our life now. Using your intuition, I mean, we had to use our intuition a lot to get a sense of what would be good, what wouldn't be good.
Did you speak many foreign languages?
No,
yourself?
just French, uh-huh. Sort of. And that got us through. But, you know, it was like a traveling tribe in a way. I mean, I took my son when he was 10. We didn't hitchhike, but it wasn't quite the same in terms of, you know, people talking to you readily. They were nice to the little kid, but I didn't kind of meet a bunch of people for me to talk to when mm-hmm. I was traveling with mm-hmm. him like that. So it was different. It was a time, and that's why in my book I talk about, you know, the Vietnam War was on, and I met a soldier who cried on my shoulder about his friend who he hadn't heard from. I mean, there were things that were going on in society that made it a very unique year and a very unique experience. And I think that a lot developed from that, and in terms of me trusting myself and my own judgment, taking risks. You know, we had to sense where to go, where not to go. We got paid for that great picking, and it was so much fun. We said, no, don't pay us. And he said, yes, you earned this money. And that was new for me to realize if you loved your work, I mean, of course you want to get paid, but money was incidental in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. a very different way of thinking, and that's why I'm not a millionaire, but I've done okay. But there's a freedom in that. And in enjoying nature, like now we talk about the environment and nature, and hopefully people are getting it. But I mean, a big part of my move to Coburg after 30 years in Toronto was because of the lake. So mm-hmm. that what we get from nature, I learned in that year, there was a book by Alan Watts that talked about the importance of nature at that time, and that had a huge effect on me, because you kind of don't learn these kinds of skills potentially or possibly at home or in school. Some of these things you learn from talking to a wide variety of people from many different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And so being open to that, no matter where you are, affects your life in a very good way.
Yes, I agree. So really, you've just said that your past still influences you. Does it influence what you write?
Well, now I'm into writing poetry, which is interesting. But you see, I think anything you do, like, because risk-taking, even though I'm a chicken, I was explaining in the first part of your show, has always been a part of me, so I'm not a confident anything. I just do it. Travel, it helped me start my own business, it helped me. When I did workshops for the government, no one ever said, have you actually worked for a company? You know, no one asked me that, and I ended up working at very senior levels with very senior people, and no one once said, what company did you work for? Which is astounding. But I think because I trusted my intuition and felt people needed to know about risk or needed to know about resilience, people needed to know how to trust their intuition, because that became such a way of life for me, I was able to help other people with it, and mm-hmm. one thing would lead to another. So now I'm writing poetry. Do I know much about it? Not really. But I'm having a good time. I won that little contest. So
yes, you won the Earth Day contest. Tell us about
that. Yes, I tied for second. Well, that, right. Even that's kind of funny, because I just thought, well, I'm going to give this a shot. I wrote poetry in high school. I have taken a few poetry classes in continuing ed at U of T. Mm-hmm. But my degree's in psychology, not English. So everything for me is kind of like, oh, I wonder if I can do this.
How about you read to us from Hippie Chick Abroad?
Okay. So I'm reading from Hippie Chick Abroad, and this is a part when I was still traveling with my friend. I called her Mary in the book. I changed all the names because some of it's quite personal. And we were staying in a pension on the island of Ibiza. Ibiza in those days was not the big party town it is now, but there were a lot of us with jeans there at the time. So this is the Spanish-speaking owner's daughter. One morning, the owner's daughter, a Spanish-speaking beauty who was about 30, asked us to accompany her up to the old fort at the top of the hill overlooking the town. We could only make out every few words of her Spanish, and she had no English, but it sounded like she was taking lunch to her husband, who was in the army and posted up there. We followed her up the steep pathway to the top of the hill. The view from the fortress was glorious. Looking out on the old town, we could see tiny whitewashed houses in the Mediterranean. While she sat with her sweetheart and ate, we watched the waves mix with the sea-green water, and farther inland, the donkeys plodding along the trails carrying their masters' ware. An hour later, it was time to go. She beckoned us to follow her into a long, narrow passageway set into the rocks. She said we were to go behind her into this tunnel. We had no idea that we were entering a former prisoner's passageway. It was keenly sloped downward, dark, slippery, and very, very narrow. We couldn't see a thing. It seemed to go on forever. Not usually one to feel claustrophobic in the dark. In that dankness of that crawl space, I felt at death's door. Water dripped from the rocks onto our faces. We stumbled along inside the dark tunnel, breathing in the musty air. I was certain that an escaped prisoner wielding a knife was going to come along behind us at any moment. The longer we spent in the tunnel, enveloped in the darkness and making our way down the steep slope, the more possible a major assault from behind seemed. Mary and I thought we were in a horror movie and were going to die. Pulses racing, bodies perspiring, feet tripping, we finally emerged from that hellhole into the blinding daylight.
That's very exciting. I thought it was going to be all sorts of funny adventures.
Oh, well, that was funny because when we came out of the dark tunnel, we realized it was her idea of a joke on us, and she just thought she was being funny, giving us an adventure.
Dear, many thanks, Reva. When will you be giving workshops?
Got a couple of individual coaching sessions, and I'll be setting something up in the fall.
And do you put that on your website or something?
I've got my email, which is revanelson77@gmail.com, or people can call me directly, 416-656-0994.
Okay. And where can listeners buy your books? Online?
My books are available at Let's Talk Books on Covert Street and here in Coburg.
To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning into the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.